So I want to thank everyone for calling in. I want to thank everyone for coming to this hybrid in-person and online share. We'll cover our first snow day of the year. We thank the Zouderers for providing the kemach for this Torah. Let's dive into Inyan HaDiyoma. Today is Dach Cyber Monday, and today is a day that many people are very busy shopping. And the shopping season, someone had suggested this year is a year about buying Hanukkah presents. So I'm not sure that's the sanitized version, but a discussion for a different time is whether it's ideal that you be buying Hanukkah presents or giving Hanukkah geld. What I really want to focus on is halachas of shopping. Halachas are common all year long, but maybe now is a good time to think about it. And to think about the way in which halacha has what to say about every aspect of life. As a matter of fact, we're going to see that three out of the four chelkei Shulchan Aruch are going to be heavily relevant to different issues that come up in shopping, in online shopping in particular. I haven't yet found an Evan HaEzer connection, but I want to take a look at one child from Aruch Chaim, one of the many. This will give us opportunity to refresh an important area in Yoredeya, which can come up any time of the year, but particularly when one is looking for deals. And finally, take a look at Choshen. Finally, in terms of halacha, we'll take a look at one of the questions that comes up in the world of Din HaMonos, the world of Choshen Mishpat. Maybe we'll wrap up by touching back on a Ramban from 2 weeks ago that I think has particular Musar relevance for this period of the year. So let's get started. Gemara tells us the number of Mishnayos throughout Masechta Shabbos. The Gemara tells us explicitly, Amir la'akum shvos, that on Shabbos a Jew is not allowed to do malacha. That's Pesukim of the Chumash. 39 malachas a Jew cannot do, as well as some other Yisurim. And the Gemara tells us, based on a series of Mishnayos, Masechta Shabbos, that there's an Issur Drabanan called Amir la'nachri. A Jew is not allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform malacha on his behalf on Shabbos. Sometimes there's this urban legend, sometimes there's a halachic misconception that some people think that Mir Lakum is a name of a heter. There's a heter, and some people think, incorrectly, you know, anything you ask a non-Jew to do is fine. It's Amir Lakum, so it's mutter, so that's incorrect. Amir Lakum is the name of an Isser. There is an Isser Drabanan. If I, as a Jew, am not allowed to perform this on Shabbos, so Mir Drabanan, I cannot ask a non-Jew to do it either. That's true if it would be forbidden for me personally to perform this act, min ha-Torah, or even if it would be forbidden for me to perform this act, midrabanan. And that's one of the Mishnayos, one of the several Mishnayos in Masechta Shabbos, that's the basis for the Isra Mirakum, actually gives this as an example. Mishnah tells me that a Jew is not allowed to have a business conversation on Shabbos with Jews or non-Jews. I'm not allowed to, even if the business is not happy on Shabbos, as Mishnah says, it's forbidden for me to ask you to have a discussion about employment conversation, to discuss hiring you, you're hiring me, to talk about the work I'd like you to do for me after Shabbos. You know, the work is happening after Shabbos, but that conversation itself is a conversation which is forbidden to have on Shabbos. That's a Mishnah in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Nun Amud Aleph. Well, Yisker Adam Poland b'Shabbos, a Jew is not allowed to hire workers on Shabbos, even though the work is only going to be handled after Shabbos. But the Gemara quotes Pesukim Yishayahu, Mim Sochefzecha v'Daber Davar, that one's not allowed to, Daber Davar is not allowed to have conversations about forbidden activities on Shabbos. The activities are happening after Shabbos, but the conversation itself is a problem. That's, number one, a good halacha to know in its own right. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, not only can I not have a conversation with you on a Shabbos afternoon or over Kiddush about hiring you for a job, I cannot even ask someone else to have that conversation with you on Shabbos. So who's this someone else, the Gemara says? The someone else is also a Jew. I cannot ask Reuven to ask Shimon. Well, the same way I can't have the conversation, Reuven can't have the conversation. So the Gemara says, obviously what the Mishnah means is I cannot ask Christopher to have that conversation on Shabbos. I need workers lined up for Monday morning. And it didn't materialize over the course of last week. So I'm going to ask a non-Jew, would you mind hiring people for me, organizing this for me over the course of Shabbos? So that too is also. Gemara says that's an example of mir la'akam shvus. If I cannot hire workers on Shabbos, even though that's only an isur, not an isur daraisa, so I also cannot have ask a nachri to do that for me on Shabbos. Now, that's what we call a shvus to shvus. I cannot ask a non-Jew to do what for me would be an isur drabanan. A double drabanan is still asur. You may have heard of the notion of shvus to shvus as a heter. As an aside, shvus to shvus is a heter. It's part of a heter. Shvus to shvus is mutter in if you can add to that a particular tzorach such as a tzorach mitzvah. I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew to do the drabanan in order to enable me to do a mitzvah. So for an example, let's say I show up, I come back from shul the first night of Sukkos, and the Sukkah is dark. And I realize I must have missed at the Shabbos clock, and everything, I realize I missed up AM, PM, the lights will be out for hours. So I'm going to have a Suvis Yantiv in the Sukkah. So what am I going to do? So if turn on the lights, if I can bring candles, but let's say it's Friday night, it's the first night of Sukkos, it's also Shabbos, I can't bring the candles. So what am I going to do? So in that situation, most of the time turning on lights is nowadays only drabanan, because typically nowadays the bulbs that we have are not incandescent bulbs, they're not filament bulbs, they're LEDs, or they're fluorescents. Because a turn on LED or fluorescent is an isur drabanan for a Jew to do. I'm not allowed to do that. I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it either, unless it's b'makom tzorach, which is b'makom mitzvah. So if it's going to enable me to fulfill the mitzvah of a yeshiva b'sukkah, so I can ask a non-Jew, would you please turn on
this
light?
Directly.
You can ask that directly.
And what about sleeping?
To enable me to sleep.
Then to shut it off.
Yeah.
You could ask them directly.
Yes. Amir, this is a situation where Amir l'akam is mutter. There is normally an isra to ask a non-Jew to instruct, to request that a non-Jew perform a lacha on my behalf. But if it's shvus to shvus, makam mitzvah, so that's an example of one of the four or five situations where Amir al-Akam is mutter. But again, what we see from this mission, Daf Kuf Nun and Aleph, is normally Amir al-Akam is aser, bein bidaraisa, bein bidrabanan. Right? So I cannot ask, normally, if it's not b'makam tzarech mitzvah, I cannot even ask the non-Jew to do an isur drabanan on my behalf, and certainly, even if it is a makom mitzvah, I cannot ask him to do a doraisa on my behalf. Now, the Shulchan Aruch discusses the halachas Amir la'akam in Simon Shin Zayin in Aruch Chaim, and one of the first points that they make, based on this Mishnah in Daf Kof Nun, is I cannot ask, please enjoy. Enjoy if you'd like. One of the first points that Shulchan Aruch makes in Shin Zayin, see from Gimel and Dalid, is that I cannot say to a Nachri, Kenei Bishvili B'Shabbos. I cannot ask a non-Jew, will you please do business on my behalf? Buy for me, sell for me on Shabbos. That's forbidden. Thank you. Thank you very much. But there are cases where it's mutter, and the Shulchan Aruch presents two tweaks. Two ways in which it can be mutter for me to ask the non-Jew to perform business. And one of those two tweaks appears here. If you're following the Daf Makoros, it's the first Marmakum, Arachayim Simon Shin Zayin, Se'if Dalet. Mutter laseis la'akum ma'os me'er Shabbos, liknoso. I'm allowed to give a non-Jewish agent money on Erev Shabbos, and I ask him to shop for me. As long as I don't say, buy on Shabbos. As I cannot ask a Nachri to buy my behalf on Shabbos, if I don't specify when, so then it's mutter. And Rama goes on to say, "V'chem mutter liten lo begadim limkar." I can also give him clothing to sell. Shulchan Aruch talks about buying, an agent to buy. Rama talks about an agent to sell. Apparently Jews have been in the garment trade for a very long time. So here you have a Jew who has a chest of clothing that he's trying to sell, a rack of clothing he's trying to sell. And he could give it to the non-Jewish agent and say, Christopher, please sell on my behalf. He can't say, please go tomorrow on Shabbos and sell for me.
Can you have something listed?
Oh, good. So we're going to come to that. So now the Mishnah Berurah says, before we figure out how to apply this, you guys, the Mishnah Berurah is very important. Mishnah Berurah says, you know, you read the Shulchan Aruch, it sounds like just like the word Shabbos is taboo. Like you can tell him what to do, just don't say Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah says, no, that's not what I mean. It's not just a question of the word Shabbos. Mishnah Berurah says, there could be other situations where it's clear that you mean Shabbos, and that's a problem too. In Yom HaShuk Sham B'Shabbos, if market day is on Shabbos, market day is on Saturday, obviously it's not a fully Jewish town. You're in a shtetl, and there are Jews or non-Jews. And the Shuk, the town market, is open specifically on Shabbos. And you're talking about a place where it's not possible to buy many items except on market day. That's the way it is. Mishnah Berurah is writing 100 years, over 100 years ago. That's the way it is in the small villages. In the big cities, yeah, stores are open every day. But if you're in a little village, maybe there's a general store that sells a couple of basic supplies, but if you want anything more fancy, anything more advanced, it's only available on market day. This town happens to have a market day, a weekly market day on Shabbos.
So those companies, like you go to like San Diego, and then there's like a day where everyone comes to see, like that?
So there are certain things that are only available for sale on that day. So let's say, if you live in Bergen County, so you have blue laws, so all the malls are closed on Sunday. So the only weekend day to go to the mall is Shabbos. I'm told by people who live in Paramus, who can see as they walk into and from shul, the traffic is geferlich, because so much of the shopping happens on Shabbos, because that's the only, Sunday is out, so the only weekend day for people to come shop, people are not shomer Shabbos, is on Shabbos. So a disproportionate amount of shopping happens on Shabbos, but the stores are also open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So if I tell Christopher, please go buy this for me, he's not forced. He could go on Shabbos, he could also go on a Tuesday. But if you're in a small village, not Bergen Mall, you're in a small village, and if you ask them to buy you a pair of scissors, the only place to buy a pair of scissors is in the market, which is only open on Shabbos. So even though I never said, please go on Shabbos, but Mishnah Berurah says, yeah, but Havale, Kema Haivav Lam is Havale. Havale, it's the same as Maskil, Yom HaShabbos Befeirish. If I say, please go buy a pair of scissors over the next 2 weeks, the only way to buy a pair of scissors next 2 weeks is on Shabbos. Even though I didn't say the word Shabbos, but it's clear. Bein Shem Vakshu L'Knos Bavuro, O Shnos Limkar. Again, both Shulchan Aruch Hamor, whether it's buying or selling, doesn't matter. If it's clear from context, if it's from environmental factors, and it's clear, if I'm asking them to buy or sell this item, it has to be in the market, which is, happens to here only be open on Shabbos, but that's the problem. I feel betchil shashavu aser. Even if I'm going to have this conversation with Christopher on a Monday, but if it's clear that the only time he can do it is to wait until Shabbos, that's a problem. And then he gives another example. He says, let's say there are no environmental constraints. Not that the only available stores are open on Shabbos. He says, and this comes up, the following line of Mishnah Berurah comes up in other contexts also. It comes up when you drop off a car with the mechanic. V'cheinam amr la Yisrael, the last line of Mishnah Berurah, re'esh ani tzarech leilich darki matzah Shabbos. You tell the non-Jew, you give the non-Jew instruction on Friday. You say, look, I didn't say do it on Shabbos. He said, by the way, I'm leaving on a trip on matzah Shabbos.
Right.
So I drop off the car. Say if I drop off the car to the mechanic on a Friday, and I say, "Look, I don't need it before Tuesday. Just get it done. I'm glad to come on Tuesday to pick it up." So that's fine. If I drop off the car on Friday and I said I have a big trip tomorrow night, I'm leaving at 9 p.m. So you're essentially telling him get the work done for me on Shabbos.
Whatever. If he has time to do it on Friday.
No. So if he has an option to do it on Shabbos or off Shabbos, so this din, so then it's mutter. But if I'm really, if either I specify do it for me on Shabbos, or I didn't specify, but I made it clear the only way for him to get it done the way that I want is to do it on Shabbos, that's the problem. Where, by the way, where does this din, the Shulchan Aruch, Rambam, Mishnah, are talking, where does it come from? So this comes from a Mishnah Gemara in Kuf Chav Beis, Mishnah Kuf Chav Beis Amal. And the Gemara is a very sharp formulation, very crisp formulation of Kuf Chav Beis Amud Beis, Masechah Shabbos. The closing lines of the 16th parak of Masechah Shabbos, the top of Kuf Chav Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara says, Gemara talks about the difference between a non-Jew who's doing it for me versus working adaita denafshei. He's working on his own behalf, by his own decision. So let's explain a little bit more. There's we've been talking up until now about the Isser Drabbanon of Amir L'Nachri. The Jew is forbidden to instruct or to request of a non-Jew to do to do the malacha, to do isurim on my behalf on Shabbos. That's an isra amira, amira l'nachri. There's a parallel essay which appears in the Mishnah Kukha Bezim Aleph, even if I didn't ask him. I did not ask an Anjou to do anything. He, of his own volition, he decided to be a friendly fellow. He knows that that Jews can't put up fresh coffee on Shabbos, and he knows that I like a hot steaming cup of decaf. So he went and put up the coffee for me. He's walked into the kitchen, and I said, by the way, it's great for you. So it's very sweet of him. It's very, very sweet of him. But I'm not, but there's an Isra, a second Isra. There was no Amira. I didn't ask. But still, if he did the malacha on my behalf, that's an Isra of Hana. I cannot have Hana from Melechas Akum Bavur Yisrael. If a non-Jew did a malacha for a Jew on Shabbos, even if it wasn't requested, it's still forbidden for me to have Hana from that malacha on Shabbos. So let's say now there are more details. We don't have time to get into it fully, but only direct Hana. So if he turns the light off for me, typically I am permitted to have Hana. I can't ask him.
Somebody clicks an elevator.
So that may be a concern. So let's get back to the elevator in a moment. So if a non-Jew turns the light off, he notices that I'm ready to go to sleep. So without being asked, he turns the light off. So I'm allowed to enjoy the light being off, because that's an indirect Hana. But if he turns the light on, that's what the Gemara says. He turns the light on. If he turns the light on for himself as well, so it's the same turn on the light, whether it's for one person or 100 people. He turned the light for himself anyhow. So then I'm allowed to enjoy it. But if he only turned on the light for me, or for Jews, a group of Jews, so I'm not allowed to have Hana. So the Gemara says, that's a Mishnah Kufcha Beis Amalaf. The Gemara says, hold on a second, I want to hear your question. So the Gemara says, Kufcha Beis Amalaf, where it tells the story of the Amora Shmuel. The non-Jew walks in. So the Gemara says, Shmuel travels to the house of a particular fellow, Abin Turan, and a non-Jew walks in and turns on the light. And he lights the lamp. So Shmuel thinks, Gvalt, he just did malacha for me. So Shmuel turns around. He didn't want to enjoy the light. But then Shmuel sees, because non-Jew came in, turned, lit the candle, and walked out. So it seemed like he was doing it. The guest is here, so he lit the light for the guest. So Shmuel says, he did malacha for me, I'm going to turn around, I'm not going to enjoy the light. But then, a minute later, the non-Jew walks back in with some reading material. He walks back in with a shtar. And obviously, he had lit the lamp because he needed to read something. So he lit the lamp, then he went to get what it was he wanted to read. So then Shmuel said, he lit for himself, so then I can enjoy, even if he lit for both of us. Even if he knew he was lying for me and for him, that's still mutter, because it's the same ner le'echad ner le'me. It's the same ner, whether it's for one person, 100 people. So once he's doing it for himself as well, so if the non-Jew turns on the coffee machine because he wants a cup, even though he knows I'm going to have a cup too, but it's the same turning it on, whether it's for one, two, or three people, so that's fine. But if he turns it on just for me, if he lights a lamp just for me, that's a problem. So here the Gemara is again. So the Gemara had formulated, it's, the din appears in the Mishnah, but the Gemara, the Amaram, a very sharp, crisp formulation, adaita denafshe. If the non-Jew is acting on his own behalf, for his own sake, so it's, there's no iser of hanavim lechazakum. What the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah are telling me here is there's also no iser of amir la'akam. If I tell the now here the case is, I did ask him to do the malacha for me, but the timing was adaita denafshe. I said, I need it over the next couple of days. If it's easier for him to do it on Shabbos, because that's when he has time, that's his business. I don't know. He could have done it on Sunday also. And sometimes he does. Sometimes the mechanic does come in on Sunday. When there's more work, with extra work that has to be handled, there's a backlog that has to be ready for Monday morning, he'll come in on Sunday. He prefers not to. I understand why. He'd rather, he has other things he wants to do on Sunday. But that's his choice. That's his choice. So if it's his choice, it's simpler for him to do a malacha, or it's simpler for him to choose to do the malacha on Shabbos rather than during the week, if it's his choice, but it's clear to him that from my perspective, he could do it on Shabbos or Monday, I don't really care, he could do it Friday, he has enough time doing it. I brought the car on Friday morning. There's hours, it's not such a long job. It's simpler for him to run his logistics of the shop, he'll do this job later. That's fine, he wants to do it on Shabbos, it's his business. But if I'm asking him to do it on Shabbos, whether explicitly or implicitly, that's a problem of Amira or Nachri. Question.
What about like a store clerk who's opening up both to get paid and also because he wants to open up his store for you?
He opens his store for me on Shabbos?
Yeah, he wants to give it, get his boss more money.
He doesn't actually, he just wants hours to work and make money.
I'm not sure what the case would be. But let's tell our practical case. Let's tell our practical shopping case, and then you'll see how this impacts. This Simon Aruch Chaim and Shimon Shinzayin, Sif Dalet, is relevant to the chiluk between, it's relevant to following Shiloh. And see, usually, here's the knitch. Here's a Cyber Monday knitch. Oftentimes, maybe this is more relevant to Cyber Thursday or Friday. Usually when you have a Shiloh of Mir al-Akum, you realize that it's a Shiloh of Mir al-Akum. I realize I'm asking a non-Jew to do something for me on Shabbos. Like, I'm in the zone. But let's say you go online and you go shopping. Online shopping. Right? So you're asking them to deliver.
Yeah, you're sending Amazon Prime. Comes right. The next day.
Exactly. So Amazon Prime on Thursday and Friday. A 2-day Prime. I order on Thursday. It's going to come on Shabbos. 1-day Prime. I order on Friday. Come on Shabbos. It might not even be sensitive to that because, well, I'm not thinking, it's not Shabbos. It's Thursday. Right? But Lamaisa, isn't that a problem? I'm clicking. I'm asking them. I just instructed them to deliver to my door on Shabbos. So if you live in an area outside the area where the non-Jew is carrying the package from the truck to your house, but even if you live inside the area, they're making a trip to my block. He's driving to my block and stopping in front of my house in order to drop for the package. I'm instructing the non-Jew to do malachas on my behalf on Shabbos.
No,
we're not. Well, so two things. Number one, so you say, I'm not going to have Hanah. True. So if he chooses on his own to do it on Shabbos, I'm not having Hanah on Shabbos anyways. That's correct. However, let's bear in mind, there are two independent Isurim here. Amir al-Akam and Hanah Malachas Akam. So you're right, I'm not going to be Nana from him until after Shabbos, because I'm not going to open the package on Shabbos. But I'm instructing him.
No, you're instructing the company.
Okay. So that's what we call Amira Damira. So the poskim discuss that most poskim assume that to ask one non-Jew, you're correct. Right? I'm reaching out to, online, or even if I make a phone call, I'm reaching out to the sales department, and they're going to pass it on to fulfillment, and they're going to pass it on to the truckers. Right. It's indirect, but that's still a problem.
It's not like setting a timer?
No, because this is Amira Nachri. I'm asking a Nachri to ask another Nachri. However, there is a solution. What's the solution?
Yeah. He's also delivering to your neighbors also.
Yes, if he's making one stop and he's delivering to five people, great. So with mail...
That's what mailmen do.
Right, mailmen make one stop per block and then they walk up and down the block. When the garbage truck will often stop and take, let's say, from both sides of the street. But Amazon, maybe a couple of years now, Amazon will be that ubiquitous that they're making multiple stops. You know, more often than not, they drive to your block for you, and then they drive to the next block for the next guy. It would seem to me that there's a chiluk between the two cases that we gave, between 2-day Prime and 1-day Prime, based on what we just learned.
But they can't deliver.
Tuesday. So what I've noticed is that 2-day, maybe we should do a trip to a fulfillment center to learn more about how they work. They are starting to do tours now. Their fulfillment center. Some of them are not so far away.
I watch a video. You can deliver if you wanted to. You sign up, you go pick up packages, and you could deliver yourself. Anybody could.
What?
I saw someone doing that the other day. What the? Great.
I don't think that's holding together a yeshiva tuition.
Yes, we're coming back. So I don't know about doing personal delivery of other people's packages. What I do know is that when you order 2-day Prime, forget about Shabbos, any time of the week, every once in a while, I would say at least 20% of the time, 2-day Prime will arrive after 1 day. Sometimes you order it, and it comes the next day. Right. So what that means is, what that tells me, is that when you order 2-day Prime, they have the capacity, even within the 2-day Prime system, to make it happen within 1 day. Obviously, not all of it does. And they're making logistical decisions about what should arrive sooner, what should not arrive sooner. But that's what we call Idaita Nafshi. They have the capacity. When I tell them on Thursday, when I click 2-day Prime, arrive on Saturday, it doesn't mean it has to arrive on Shabbos. It means it has to arrive by Shabbos. It means bring it between now, over the next 48 hours. If it arrives after a day, no one is complaining.
You could say, maybe it will be delivered after Shabbos.
I'm sorry?
One day prime, you could say maybe it'll be the other.
Right, so one day prime, they may, in this, so that's, so someone mentioned that to me over the course of this past Shabbos. So one day prime sometimes comes at night. So it could be even one day prime with mutter in the winter, though not in the summer. In other words, in the winter, if it comes at 5 o'clock, that's already, Shabbos is out. We already may have dollar. Right? 5:30, we may have dollar already.
10 o'clock.
But during the summer...
Wouldn't it be that there would be a problem in the winter because Shabbos starts earlier?
Shabbos starts earlier, but they could deliver at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. If I order on Thursday, 2 day prime, it could come 11 o'clock in the morning on Friday, it could come 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, it could come 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. Now, as you're saying, even 1 day prime, it could come, I order on Friday, 1 day prime, it's coming on Saturday, but lav dafka on Shabbos. And maybe it's coming on Shabbos, Saturday Shabbos, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, or maybe it's...
There's also other trucks that are working and getting to you, that's my issue.
The other trucks are working and getting to you, what do you mean?
If you order something from like Montana, it's not one guy bringing it to your house, it's going from one...
that's a good point. So in terms of the larger logistics, before it gets to my door, so you're saying there are people definitely driving on Shabbos, I order on Friday, so in order for it to get to you, Matzah Shabbos, Now, so that may make the 1 day prime cool a little dicey. Let's talk about that. The 2 day prime, the issue of ordering 2 day prime on Thursday, it could come on Friday. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. So that's the logistical decision that they're making. I think. Now the 1 day prime. So you are right, and you had mentioned before, well, maybe it's mutter because it might arrive Matzah Shabbos. You say, on the other hand, if it arrives Matzah Shabbos, a lot of things probably have to happen on Shabbos, which is a good point. Now the question is, how many melachos are being done for me? The fact they're driving a truck with 10,000 packages, that's what we spoke of before. That's ner lecha, ner lemeya. Driving the truck is not just for me. The question is, what's happening in the fulfillment center? When they're wrapping and packaging things, the question is, how do they work? Is that
if it's not a person? Now I'm thinking about it. Centers are all robots.
Oh, so if they set the robots to go, so they did one malacha when they got the robot started.
Why? Automatically when you click a button.
Right. So the question is how it happens. If there's one malacha that's covering 10,000 packages, so once again, that's ner lecha, ner lemeya. That's like lighting the candle for me and for him. Turn on the coffee for me and for him. So the 1 day prime, I think, needs more research in terms of what's going on behind the scenes. What's going on in the fulfillment center, how the different steps work. So that's something I think needs more thought. But the 2 day prime on Thursday, lech ora, being that it does a fair mute of the time show up after 1 day. So the fact that it will often show up after 2 days, that's a daita d'nafshe. That's Amazon's decision. I'm asking them to do something that they could do on Erev Shabbos or on Shabbos. So 2 day prime on Thursday, lechor should be heter gamer. Yeah.
Regarding what Dovi said before about I actually knew about this also, that Amazon has like this Uber style program where people can choose to pick up packages and deliver.
Mm-hmm.
So that person who's picking up packages is choosing to do so for himself so he can make money.
Correct. Oh. Well, I did ask them to find some non-Jews. I've asked them to find someone to deliver. The fact that it's a particular delivery person, but I did ask them to have someone deliver. Right? So I'm not sure that would help. So this is one Orach Chaim aspect of shopping. I think it's Kedai Bechlal to raise our awareness of the issue of Dabar Davar, of issues of Miral Nachri, Hanan Lechaz Nachri, and to begin to develop our sensitivity to when it's Mutter, when it's Asr. One Yoredeya area, and Simon Kuf Chaf is dedicated to Halachas of Tfilas Kelim. I think, I'd be curious to ask people who work in the Kelim Mikvah, I suspect that December is the second busiest month. The Kelim Mikvah. I think the busiest month of Kelim Mikvah are the weeks that lead up to Pesach. I think the second busiest month is shopping season, because the Maaseh things are on sale now. And Chachamei Avraham show many people will buy housewares. I think it's the second busiest time to buy Pesach Kelim is December. Like if you know you're making Pesach the first time, right? Remember, you know, there are more things we need that we didn't have last Pesach. We won't have this kind of Pesach. So oftentimes, you know, better to go to Chef Central, Bed Bath & Beyond, wherever you like to shop, better to go now than to go. There aren't necessarily going to be sales in March, but there will be sales in December.
Maybe that's why Cheshvan's wedding season.
Maybe that's why Cheshvan is wedding season. Perhaps.
Why?
Because it's a good time to for people to buy gifts, I guess. So interesting thought. Maybe. So it's a good time also to think about, to review some of the dinim of a Tfilas Kelim. I want to touch lightly on a couple of the key issues. A Tfilas Kelim, like many other areas of halacha, breaks down to two halves. The question of which chefza and what the maisa looks like. That is, which sorts of kelim are chayv in Tfilas Kelim. And assume that a kli is chayv in Tfilas Kelim, is it how you go about doing the maisa tefillah. So let's spend 60 seconds reviewing the chefza, just Rashi Prakim, and then a couple of minutes talking about some issues in the Maisa. The Kalim, this comes from the Sugyas in Ayin Heim and Beis, Mishnah Gemara, Ayin Heim and Beis, and Masachas of Aruzara, based on Psukim Parshas Matos. The Torah speaks there about the aftermath of the incredibly successful war that the Jews wage against the Midianim in the 40th year of the Midbar. And the Psukim and Parshas Matos talk extensively about how they handled all the various sorts of booty that the Jews brought back from that route. And there's one paragraph, one parsha in particular, the Torah says, well, if you'll have metal, kalim, gold, silver, copper, tin, and iron, lead, you may need to kasher it. You may need to have dry heat, wet heat, hagala, libun, and then even if you don't have to kasher it, either way, and even if this particular, you may have to kasher it, and anyhow, you're going to have to tovel it. And that becomes the source for tefilas kalim. It becomes the source now, and the three conditions all come from that parsha. The three conditions are material, function, and history. Material means it has to be made out of metal. Torah lists six metals. Gemara says midrabanan, glass, is also chayiv in tefillah. There is a machlokas. There was a machlokas in the 20th century, the machlokas in the 19th century. How about other metals? Now that we have titanium, you have a titanium canteen. Right? For people who are professional hikers, you want to save every ounce. So the titanium canteen will be somewhat lighter than some other material, and it'll keep it cold, keep it hot. So it's not made of gold, silver, copper, tin, iron, lead. So that's a machlokas. It was machlokas Rav Yaakov and Rav Moshe Feinstein. It was machlokas previously the Vilna Gaon and the Tiferes Yisrael, the Yachon and Boaz. Whether those are just six examples of metals, those were the six metals that were commonly in use. And the Bitkufas HaTarach, or that's a comprehensive list, and aluminum and titanium are excluded. Okay, so that's a machlokas, but generally speaking, metal, that's either metal or glass. The Breuer's Kehila has their own private chumra about plastic. If you belong to the Kehila, you should be tovel plastic without a bracha, otherwise you should not tovel plastic. But be that as it may, So we don't tovel other materials, something which is made out of, let's say you have earthenware or ceramic, like your typical ceramic mug, or rubber or wood, or for the vast majority of kilos plastic, all these items do not require tevila. In this, I should note that China is not chayv in tevila, but Corel is. Those white weekday plates with a pattern around them, that's Corel. You look on the bottom, it says Corel, that means it's really glass. When it shatters, you can tell it's glass. It's glass with a pigment. So glass, whether it's clear or colored, requires tefillah. So that's criteria number one. Criteria number two is the function has to be, it's used for food, and specifically it's used directly in contact with food. Corkscrews and can openers are not chayv in tefillah, even though you cannot drink the wine or eat the food in the can without the corkscrew or the can opener, because in their function, they're critical, but they don't contact the food or drink directly. Let's say the grate on your stovetop, that we shown them, say, those black grates on your stovetop, it's absolutely critical, otherwise the pot would fall and put out the fire. But even though they're critical for cooking, they don't directly contact the food. That's not called a clay suda. Clay suda is something that comes in direct contact with the food in the course of preparing or serving or eating or maybe storing the food. And the third criterion is the ownership history. That, as was the case with the clay midyan, it used to belong to a non-Jew and presently belongs to a Jew. Whether it belongs to you or to someone else, but if it used to belong to a non-Jew, buy a silver becher from a Jewish silversmith who sold it to a Jewish Judaic-owned Judaic store who sold it to a Jewish end user, there's no chi of tefillah. Why? If at some point, because that's the...
We assume it's tovod already?
No, but there's no chi. The chi of tefillah is only kelim ha-nikachim and ha-akam. That's the original scenario that the Torah describes.
But who's making the...
Hold on one second.
I'm just going to grab a water.
Hold on. Okay, after that brief intermission. So once again, here in Avodah Zarah, in Heim Abayz, the din of Amir Lanah, the din of Tevilas Kalim, which applies only to Kalim that are similar in three ways to the original story of Midyan, that they are made out of metal, umidrabban, out of glass, that they are things that are used for food, in direct contact with food, and therefore, if they're already used, would require tefillah also. Although, as the Gemara notes, the chi of tefillah is kelim, even if the kli is new. It's if it's a sort of kli that has that function, that it comes into direct contact with food and could ultimately require kashering, then already, even if it's new, if it's made of metal or glass and is used in direct contact with food and at some point belonged to a non-Jew and now belongs to a Jew, as was the case with the clay midyan, so then you're chayv in tefillah is kelim. Now in terms of the process of tefillah kelim, so Shulchan Aruch tells us here in Siman Kuf Chaf, it's a mitzvah, you make a bracha, unless it's a suffix, but in the case of a vaday, you make a bracha, it's Siv Gimel. Now the big question is like this, when you, unlike kashering, which is a physical process to remove the flavor that's absorbed into the kli, tefillah is a spiritual process. It's a formal halachic process, it's not a physical process, which is why Gemara tells us, Shulchan Aruch quotes, you can kasher part by part. If I have a very long pan, I can't fit the whole pan into the kashering pot at once, so I could do this side and then take and do the other side. But with tefillah, that's because it's a physical process. It took the blias out of this side, took the blias out of that side. But tefillah's kelim doesn't work that way. Tefillah's kelim, you have to be one moment when the entire surface of the kli is simultaneously in contact with the meha mikvah. Which is why they discuss how do you even hold the kli. If I'm going to hold tight, over here, so everything else gets into mikvah, then I'm going to hold for a different spot. That doesn't work. That's the one moment when I'm holding everything. So that's why Shulchan Aruch says, either you drop it into a bucket, or you hold it loosely, or I get my hand wet with the mikvah water, and then I hold, even if I'm holding tightly, if my hand already has the mikvah water on it, so then there's already a layer of water in between. It's what we call, based on the Mishnah and Mikvah, it's called Mayim Mikadim.
But if you pass it from one hand to another...
That's fine. So you put it in, you put it into the other hand under the mikvah. That's totally fine.
If you
use a bucket, the bucket has holes in it. The bucket doesn't hold water. And it's attached to the meha mikvah.
Wait,
but
do like half and half?
You dunk the bucket
first.
No, you can't do half. It has to be one moment. Okay. Which is also why the baskets are dangerous sometimes. Because to do a few, put a couple of pieces of cutlery into the basket is fine. If you're going to have a whole set of 84 pieces in the bucket, and then you put the bucket into the mikveh, there are going to be pieces that are, right, the water's not going to get into all the cracks. There'll be pieces as the spoons up against each other, there'll be spots where the water doesn't touch, which is why sometimes if there aren't so many pieces, you can just shake it. If there are a lot of pieces, shaking is not necessarily going to work. What you may want to do is drop, instead of loading the bucket first and then lowering it into the mikveh, lower the empty bucket into the mikvah, then drop the cutlery in one piece at a time. And that way, every piece has its split second when it's falling through the meha mikvah before it hits the bottom. At that moment is when the tefillah occurs. And the Shulchan Aruch stresses in Sif Yud Beis, when we say the entire kli has to be under the water, that's even the non-business end. In other words, once if you have a kli with a handle, let's say I have a metal knife or a metal ladle with a rubber or plastic handle. So the whole kli, even though part of it is rubber, but since the business end is metal, the whole kli is chayav in tefillah. Sarach latli deikli. Stickers are a great question. How about stickers? Well, let's talk about Hagala a different time. But Hagala, you only have to kasha the metal part of the kli. But we were actually going to get to that. We'll get to Hagala in, when we get back to Maseches Chulin, the next sugya, we're going to get into kashrin. The question of kashrin actually comes in our sugya. The very next day, tomorrow, Mr. Chen, when we come back to Maseches Chulin, there's a Nedi Behuda that's going to help us solve our difficult Rashi, and it's rooted in a Hagala discussion, some inside out. So we'll talk about that, Mr. Chen, B'li Neder, tomorrow. So coming back here to World Tefillos Kiyum. I'm sorry?
What if it's like a metal handle with a plastic tip?
A metal handle with a metal handle with a plastic tip.
Like the label's plastic, but the handle's metal.
It's like a fancy thing with a metal.
That usually will be putter. Because the business end of it is not metal or glass, typically you're putter. Now how about so you were asking, well, you need the word to be in touch with entirely at the same time. How about stickers? So that's if you'd gimel. And Kelly, if you have rust, they don't talk about stickers, they talk about rust. The issue is the same. They say that's a problem of chatzitza. And sometimes you have to remove it, and sometimes you don't. Because the din is that the chatzitza is a problem either if it covers most of the kli, or most of the person, most of the aver of the person, or even if it covers a small, which they usually rarely do stickers cover most of the surface, but even if it's a miut, if it's a miut hamakbin, a miut that you care about, it bothers you that it's there. Sort of thing, exactly, you want to remove it. So then, if it's a davar hamakbin, then it is chotzitz. It's either a tomer d'rabanan, but it's chotzitz. But if it's a miut she'eino makbid, it only covers a small amount of the kli. And I don't really care. So then it's fine.
Meaning what? You're not going to remove.
So what's an example? So usually, if you have it, you buy something that has a sticker on it, you want to remove the sticker. Even if it takes a couple of minutes to remove it, typically you're going to want to remove it. If you don't get it off at the mikveh, you take it home and take a Brillo pad, take steel wool, and get it off. So if you're going to want to get it off, and maybe it's hard to get off at the mikveh, but I'll get it off tomorrow when I get home, then that's a davar, that's a min hamakbid, and the tevila is not valid until that sticker is removed. Until it's not valid unless you remove that sticker before tovelin. However, Shulchan Aruch points out, if you're not makbid, then it's fine. For instance, an obvious example of not makbid may not be a great example from a mito's perspective, but let's say I want this sticker. It has snob appeal. It's a Tiffany sticker. It's a little Tiffany sticker on the... Maybe it's not even a Tiffany bowl, but I bought a Tiffany sticker. As the case may be.
You put the sticker on.
So again, it's not necessarily an expression of fine midos to want that snob appeal. But if lemaisa, for better or for worse, the owner wants the sticker to stay on, so that's not a davar hamakbid. It's not something that I wish it was off.
Or you don't care.
So let's see, example. Let's say you have a pan. Sometimes they sell pots and pans with a big sticker on the bottom surface.
Yeah.
The side that faces the fire. So no one cares about that. If I can take it off, I take it off. If I can't take it off, let it sit there. It'll burn off over time. It'll burn up, won't burn up. Who doesn't really matter to me? No one sees it anyways. So then, if I don't really care to remove it, I'm fine with it staying there. So then I'm not mochiv to remove it before the tefillah. Or, Shulchan Aruch says, Shulchan has a chiddush. Even if something does bother me, I've been trying to get off for a couple minutes. It's not coming off. And I realize that they don't have steel walls. They talk about, I take a hot coal. I'm rubbing it against this spot to try to remove the stuff. It's not coming off. So if I wish I could get off the lamaisa,
but you could probably get it off eventually.
So if when I have better materials at home, here I just have a plastic knife in the mikveh, but I'm going to get home. I'm going to have steel. I'm going to have detergent. I'm get off. So then you got to take it home, remove it, and come back to the mikveh. But if it's not going to come off at home either. I wish it's a little ugly. I wish I could get this sticker off, but this stuff is not coming off. So I say, look, maybe it'll come off in the next couple months, maybe it won't. Once I decide, yeah, I'm just not going to bother with it, at that point, honestly, I'm not going to bother with it anymore because it's just not coming off. At that point, even though it bothers me that it's there, I wish it wasn't there, but practically speaking, I have no plans to remove it because I don't see how I can. At that point, it's no longer makbid and it's no longer a problem in terms of field scale. And now let us discuss our final halachic issue. And that is the following. I did not find an Evan HaEzer aspect to online shopping, but there's plenty in Chosh Mishpat. Chosh Mishpat is all about Dinim Amanus. Let's talk about the following Shiloh, our closing Shiloh. There are a lot of stores that have very, very generous, both online and in person, have very, very generous return policies. 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, no questions asked. You bring it back in good condition, you can return it. No questions asked. I'm not going to ask you what you didn't like about it. They'll just take it back. Target has that. There are a number of stores, a number of large stores that have that. So some people had this idea.
To send something different back.
Right. So I'm making a... I'm having guests over. I'm having some... You know, I'm going away for a week, and we need an extra fill-in-the-blank. We need extra chairs. We need extra pot. We need extra whatever. So we'll go to Target. We'll buy it. We'll keep the receipt, and we'll bring it back 2 weeks later. You know, I'm traveling, and I realize that I left all my ties at home. So I'll go to a Target, I'll buy a couple of ties, and then when I get back home, I'll return them. And some people think this is a very brilliant idea. You use them for free, bring them back, shine. So the question is, that's very brilliant, but is that chachamim lahara? Is that brilliance used in nefarious ways? Is this the right thing to do?
Someone else says, can you get an offer?
Oh, so let's take a look. Now, there is a notion, and this we came across in Maseches Chulin already, there is a notion of mekach tos. If I buy something, so if I buy something from you, I do sometimes have the right to demand a refund. If it turns out that's the wrong measurement, or it's the wrong item, or there's a mum, but take a look here, Shohosh Mishpat, Reish Lama Beis, Sif Gimel, the first Ma'amakam, the second side of the page. I sell you something, whether it's karka, metalton, whatever it is, any sort of good, any sort of merchandise. Then we discover, the buyer discovers that it's, the item is defective in some way. Even if it's 5 years later, but it turns out there's this defect that I never knew about, I discovered a couple years later. So I can come back to you. There's no time limit. Under Al-Pi Halacha, there's no time limit. Shazen Mekachtos. This is absolutely Mekachtos. But here's the catch. V'hu shelo yishtamesh b'mekach achasheyedah b'mum. If I discover that the merchandise I bought was defective, so I have the right to return it unless I continue to use it after I discover the defect. Obviously, I was using it beforehand. I didn't know there was a defect. If after I discover the defect, I say, whoa, this is the problem, I got to return it, then you have to put it aside. You can't use it any longer. Why? Continuing to use it after you discover the defect is implicit mechila. You're basically saying, it's fine. So you can't keep using it and then try and say, I want to return it. Now, you might say, but here it's very different because it's simon reish chaf hei, sif hei. Here, this is not just mekach tos. Shulchan Aruch does say, Mehistam Ocher Befeirush, that the buyer and the seller can make whatever sort of conditions that they both mutually agree to. So the Shulchan Aruch says the seller can make a condition that he's not offering any warranty. If things don't work out, you cannot return it. And if the buyer agrees, that's what they agree to. Or vice versa. In our case, the seller agrees to very generous returns. As its Shulchan Aruch ends, based on the language of the Tanan, Shekol Tanai Shev Mamon Kain. Whatever mutual agreement the buyer and seller make in a contract, that's valid. So every the back of every Targa receipt, there's a contract. It talks about the return policy, and it's very generous. So you might say, what's wrong? So there are several things which are wrong. In general. If you call, I'll tell you when it's mutter. I believe that if you were to call customer service and tell them, look, I'm buying this, but I don't intend to keep it. I intend to buy it, use it for a week, and give it back. Are you okay with that? Or perhaps if you ask a store manager. I think customers
Who can you ask?
Now, so I would assume they would say, absolutely not. Now, it's possible that there might be some stores that would say, that's totally fine. Why would a store possibly say it's totally fine?
Because they know
it's marketing.
Right, because they might realize that
you might keep it.
It may be because many people may take it for a week, and then they'll like it, or they'll just forget about returning it, or they'll lose their receipt. So it could be there may exist stores that that have made the conscious decision that even though you, the customer, think you're outsmarting us, we really think this is in our benefit, our best interest. So if a store is explicit about that, if you ask them and say, yeah, that's totally fine. If they, again, you can't ask, I don't think a cashier is entitled, is empowered to give you an answer. But I assume customer services, and I would assume store managers probably are also. So if you actually ask them, and they say, we're totally comfortable with that, we're a store to say that, so then if they're fine with it, they're fine with it. I doubt, though, that there are many stores that actually have that policy. I think it would be awkward to even ask the question. I think it would be inappropriate to even ask the question. And certainly, if you don't ask the question, there are several issues. So one, the most obvious issue is Simon Reish Chav Ches Sevav, which is actually based, it's a din in Chosh Mishpat, based not on a Gemara in the Bavas, it's based on a Mishnah in Maseches Chulin. In the seventh parak of Chulin, there's a very important din in Dinim Amnus, which is the Isser of Genevas Das. Shulchan Aruch is very, very clear about this. Asur, l'ramos b'nei adam, not just not a good idea. Absolute isser. To fool people, to give people false impressions, b'mekach u'memkar, in a financial situation, or lignov daitam, in some other way, to what mean to steal their das, it means to make them think, to act under false pretenses. Even if it's something that I have a cheshbon, doesn't really matter. I'm going to tell the non-Jew, here's a piece of kosher meat, enjoy. Here's a bottle of kosher wine, enjoy. It happens to be it's not kosher. So a Jew might mistakenly think, what does it matter? He has no hilchos kashrus. So what could be wrong? So the Mishnah says, absolutely isser. Absolute isser gomer. Why? Even though he's allowed to eat kosher and non-kosher, but I'm giving him the impression for a Jew to give a kosher gift to a non-Jew, obviously is a greater sign of friendship than to give a non-kosher gift. It's something I could eat myself, and I'm giving it to you. It's a special added degree of friendship. And I'm fooling him. I'm making him think that I'm being more friendly than I am. Or Shulchan Aruch goes on to give other examples from Chazal. Let's say a guest comes over for a meal, and we open up a new bottle of wine. So he thinks we popped open a fresh bottle of wine, l'chvodo. But in fact, we just used up the last bottle, so we need to open a new bottle. Anyways, we made it seem as though even though there's no financial enough, you know, I'm not stealing dollars and cents, but I'm falsely creating goodwill. I'm making him think that I'm acting in a friendlier way than I actually am. That is an Isser Gamer called Genevas Das. And certainly, as Shulchan Aruch points out, in a financial context. As to walk into a store and make it seem like you're interested in their merchandise when you're not, unless you make it clear, or it's clear from context that you're window shopping, that's a problem. So this is certainly a very severe issue of Genevas Das. It may even be Genevas Mamon, because some who write on this topic point out, in addition to Genevas Das, if some suggest, look, if in my mind I'm not actually buying this, I'm just borrowing it, I'm giving you money temporarily, so in my mind, I'm a shoel. But you, the store has no interest in lending things to me. They're in the business of selling things. So if I borrow your items that you don't authorize me to borrow, that's what we call shoel shlomidas. I borrowed your pen when you weren't looking. So the Gemara says shoel shlomidas gazlan. Even I didn't mean to keep it forever. I just wanted to borrow it and use it and give it back. But even if my intent is just to borrow, but if I borrow without your permission, shol shlomi das gazlan. So some suggest. Problem number two is this is a shol shlomi das. And if it's a Jewish-owned store, it may be a third issue of ribis, because you're essentially lending them money and profiting from it. You gave them money, you're going to get back the money in 2 weeks from now, and as a result of that loan, essentially, you're using an item for free. So if it's a Jewish-owned store, there's no Isser Ribbis between a Jew and a non-Jew, but between two Jews, there's an Isser Ribbis. And finally, in addition to Genevas Das, and potential Genevas Mamon, because Shol Shlomi Das Gazan Havi, and if it's, excuse me, a Jewish-owned store, the problem with Ribbis, above all, perhaps the most severe, these are all severe issues, even more severe than all of these, is the problem of, that the Gemara discusses in Yuma Daf Pei Vav Amal. And that is a question of Chil Hashem.
Yeah, what about the people who buy four of the same item, just different sizes, because you're not sure?
No, but then you return some. You return some and you keep some.
But they think you're going to...
They're fine with
that. Oh, that's legitimate.
They're fine with
that. I'm trying out what I paid for all four sizes. Then I return three of them, and I get the money back for three, and I keep the fourth. But if I'm not planning to use all four, I'm going to try them on. I'll see what I like, see what I don't like. That's what stores want. Try, see if you like it. Either keep them all or return the ones you don't like. But here, the issue is, that's not problematic. That's the way it's supposed to work. But here the issue is, I know invest, I'm going to return everything that I'm buying, and I want to use it. Now I'm going to try it, and then I may return it. I plan to use it for a period of time for what I need. I need five extra chairs for a simcha that I'm making for the weekend, so I'll buy five chairs, and then I know in advance that I'm going to return them next week after I haven't used them. So that's, again, that's Gnevas Das. That may be Shol Shlomi Das Gazlan. If it's a Jewish-owned store, there's a ribbis issue. And Gemara says Yuma Pevav. If a Jew is, the more Jews connected to Torah, here's a Jew who went to yeshiva, here's a Jew who's involved in learning, here's a Jew who's visibly involved in mitzvahs. But his business activities are not in good faith. He doesn't speak pleasantly with other people. He doesn't speak calmly with other people. He has a temper. He has an edge. Mahabriyas Omer Salav. What would people say? Alola Ploni Shlama Torah. Alola Avish Lim Do Torah. Woe is to such a person. Look, he learned Torah. His parents sent him to yeshiva. And look what happened to him. His Rebbe taught him Torah. Ploni Shlama Torah. Ru'u Kama Meku Kala Maisav. Kama Meku Oren Drachav. Look, here's a Jew who learned Torah. And look how debased he is. Look how immoral he is. Look how unpleasant he is to be around. That's a Chil Hashem. And in the reverse, the Gemara says, what we strive for is the opposite. A Jew who's going to engage in this sort of behavior, and there are reports, I don't know whether they're substantiated or non-substantiated, but even the fact that there's such a havamina, there are reports of stores that will not do returns from certain zip codes, because they know that those zip codes are
Amazon blogs people.
Misha Kore Vishonu Masham Shimechachamim, and unfortunately there's a percentage, a non-insignificant percentage of people who are Mikukala Maaseh Mikhuan Drachem, who play fast and loose with returns. So Rahman Atzlan, so that, if, I hope it's not true. It may be merely rumors. But if that's true, that's a Chil Hashem, the first order. And Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us instead to do the opposite. Gemara says, but someone who's Karav Hashem, a Jew who learns in yeshivas and attached to Rebbeim and grew as a Ben Torah, and he is Masama Tanim Bemuna, he's a paragon of honesty and integrity, and everything is squeaky clean. And Dibur Benachas Mabrius, and the way he treats people is princely and gentlemanly. So then people say, Ashrei Mishalim the Torah, Ashrei. Lucky are the parents who sent him to yeshiva. Lucky are the Rebbeim who trained him. You see how glorious are the way. See how glorious his behavior is. You see how impressive is the way he conducts himself financially, the way he conducts himself interpersonally, and that's the sort of Kiddush Hashem that we're called upon to do. And the sort of ambitious Kiddush Hashem to not cut corners and try to get away with shtick, but to seek to take the high road. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of us. To seek to be ambitious people. And we'll close with that Ramban in this context that we had a chance to see in Shir 2 weeks ago. Parshas Chayesar. The Ramban talks about Avraham Avinu passed away saveya. He passed away content. And the Ramban said, content? His stomach was full. He says, no. That he was happy with what he had. Ramban had pointed out at the time, you have it here at the end of Maram Kamos, Astirim Psukim. Davar Melech says, Tavas Libanos Atalo. Davar Melech tells him, Tillim, that it's conceivable that you have a Jew who, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gave him everything he wants. And that's the way the others are described. And yet, in general, you have a pasuk by David's son Shlomo in Koheles, Ohev Kesef Lo Yispa Kesef. The Jew who wants money is never Saveya. He's never satisfied with his money. And the Ramban quotes a famous Medrash Rabbah on that pasuk. No man leaves this world with even half of his desires fulfilled. If a fellow has 100, he wants 200. See, he thinks that when he gets to 200, then he'll be happy. I'm making $100,000 a year. If Olam was making $200,000 a year, then I'll be good. But then, to his surprise, he sigia d'lamasayim, when he makes it to 200, misava lasses arbameos. He's not happy. Now he's thinking, he always wants 2x. It's a moving target. He thinks when he gets there, then he'll be happy. But once he's there, he no longer wants there. Now he wants double there. When he gets to 200, he's not happy because now he thinks, if only I had 400. And that's an endless loop. Ohev kesef lo yispa kesef. So the Ramban had said, Astira, are people never happy? They always want, grass is always green on the other side? Or is there a possibility of tavas libo nasatalo, that I could actually have achieved what I was dreaming of? And to have a sense of fulfillment. Says, look, Avravino is Saveya, Yitzhak is Saveya, Dabra Melech is Saveya, and the answer is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them, and they have shaped themselves into the sort of people who can appreciate and be satisfied with HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them. And then number two, Mida Tova Bahem, Shlo Yisavu B'mos Aros. On the one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'chazdo gives, and on the other hand, these tzaddikim, have developed this Mida Tova, Shlo Yisavu B'mos Aros, that their taiva, their desires are not just for excess, are not just for luxury. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends luxury their way, they're glad to enjoy it. Avraham Avinu did have luxury. That's the way the Torah describes. He had plenty. He was a wealthy man. David HaMelech was a wealthy man. Yitzchak Avinu was a very wealthy man. But that wasn't what they were dreaming of. What they were yearning of is basics. Family, health, dignified parnasa, connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what Rabban writes earlier in Parashat Chayesar. So if the taivas are not for Mosaros, if the dreams and desires, the sights are not set on luxury, so then you set yourself up for happiness. That's sort of the machshava of this whole parasha. There are specific dinim that, as you saw, that drive the way we engage with shopping. But it's important to also keep not only to think about the halacha of shopping, but the hashkafa of shopping, and the culture, the commercial culture, seeks to get us to constantly need to buy. And there's an enormous amount of hype, particularly this time of the year. And a Ben Torah needs to make sure that he's engaging the world on his terms, not on its terms. I'm engaged with the world has to offer, but my values come from within. My values come from Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. So there may be great deals, and if there's something that you need, something makes sense to buy, it's by all means, take legitimate, honest advantage of the deals and shop. But make sure that the approach is an approach of Tavas Libun Asatolo and not of Oev Kesli Spakes. Rabbi Yisai, thanks so much for coming. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for coming in person.
Thank you.